And seating's changed, and things are just different.
It's just everything feels so different. I don't think I can do this.
No, I know, but, like, somehow we have to just power through and find it within ourselves to carry on.
I don't think I can. You go.
Okay, I'll go. For the two of us, I'll carry on.
Be so brave.
I'm gonna be so brave about it when I go.
What's going on, Titans? Welcome back to another episode of Daily Titan Podcast, or DT Pod for short. In today's episode, we're gonna be breaking down volume 118, issue number 8 of the Daily Titan Student Newspaper. In this episode, we're going to be going over a couple of stories, including one new story about the noise ordinance. We're also going to be covering a play review written by our lifestyle editor. We're also going to be talking about an opinion on gun control, and we're going to wrap it up talking about some volleyball. Stay tuned, Titans. Enjoy the episode. And before I forget, I'm your co-host and layout editor, Kabir Kansara.
And I'm Damiana Gabriel, co-host and assistant news editor. For our top story this week, we have news editor Michelle King here to discuss.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Back again.
Yay.
Okay. So what are you here to talk about?
City Council noise ordinance.
Yeah. And could you explain a little bit about what this noise ordinance is?
Yes. So the city has introduced some regulations about volumes of noise in downtown Fullerton.
Yeah.
So the regulations kind of set up some times of day where noise can be at certain levels. So between 5 p.m. and 10 p.m. in downtown Fullerton, the max volume is, or will be, 80 decibels. Between 7 a.m. and 10 p.m., the max decibels is 75 for 5 minutes or 80 decibels for 1 minute.
Yeah. And I know that this ordinance would only be targeting commercial areas, correct? Not residential areas?
Correct, yeah. It's just in the downtown area.
Yeah. And also, since it is, like, their first vote on an ordinance, the city council in this meeting voted just to introduce this ordinance, meaning they would have to vote on it again in the future.
Yes, there will be a second vote on it. And
yeah.
Then after that second vote, 30 days later, the regulations will take effect.
And the second vote would be at the next city council meeting, presumably next Tuesday?
Presumably, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So with these sort of limitations placed on sound, it seems like a lot of locals and a lot of local businesses have sort of their own response to this, considering Fullerton is a city built upon sort of like outdoor music and live sound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of public commenters came out to kind of speak their disdain of this ordinance, because there is so much live music and just, like, social life in downtown Fullerton.
Yeah.
That is loud. Like, a lot of the bars and clubs and stuff are just loud on weekends. So there was a good amount of kind of complaints from the public, saying that they didn't want this ordinance because it would kind of take away from the liveliness of downtown Fullerton.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite quotes in the article, something that I feel like really illustrated this point, was the quote from Mike Johnson, a Fullerton resident and musician, who said that music is not noise, it's the heartbeat of people.
Yes.
And I think his sort of follow-up to this being that, you know, Fullerton is where Fender Guitars was founded, mm-hmm. and, like, you know, there's a historic music scene here in its own right.
Absolutely. Yeah,
absolutely. I think that really illustrates this point that a lot of local businesses, or just locals in general, would suffer mm-hmm. from this sort of limitation placed on sound.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of cafes, restaurants, clothing stores that host their own kind of concerts. Most of them are several nights a week, if not every night.
And then I think Mayor Pro Tem Charles also mm-hmm. discussed that this ordinance didn't really, like, take into account exceptions for bar owners or bars in the area, although it does take into account special events and mm-hmm. kind of noise limitations on days of special events. I think that was the reason that she cited for her voting no to introduce the ordinance, because of that, in her opinion, in her words, like, lack of consideration towards bar owners.
She talked about bar owners and people who also aren't just, like, local business owners.
Yeah.
That they would be affected by the 80 decibel limit, that it is too low.
And it seems like the regulations on this decibel limit are a lot stricter than they have been previously, with, you know, them measuring these decibels at the property line versus 25 feet or 25 yards?
25 feet from the source or nearby properties is what the old, like, method of measurement for noise violations would be.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think that was also kind of a point that was brought up again and again in public comment. actually both in public comment and from council members that measuring noise violations from the property line, they were concerned that that was a little bit stricter.
Yeah, I guess it could be a lot closer than 25 feet if you're on the property line and whatever it is right on the property line. It definitely is cracking down on a lot of noise in downtown Fullerton, which, I mean, there's also a lot of public commenters that still came out in support saying that it is too loud in downtown Fullerton. Maybe they live there and it's too noisy to live there.
Also, speaking for people and council members who supported the ordinance, I know that there were a couple of surveys conducted in the area that showed, according to Mayor Jung, that even with the 80 decibel limit, there were no commercial areas that like were playing music during the evenings that were found to be in violation of the proposed ordinance.
They did a lot of testing to kind of work out what that level would be that wouldn't interfere too much
and
with local businesses. It is different. I mean, it's hard to say. There is a divide within the council. So Shanna Charles kind of said that she spoke to owners and they believe that this would impact them significantly. Whereas Fred Jung said that he went out and tested them and there wasn't anything in violation already, so it wouldn't therefore be impacting business. So there's kind of a little bit of divisiveness amongst the council on that one.
And then I think speaking to the final vote, it was 3-2, and I think that that like 3-2 vote has been kind of a recurring pattern with this new city council.
It's frequently turns out the same way.
Who all voted which way?
The two dissenting votes were Ahmad Zara and Shanna Charles. And the final vote, as is how voting goes, was Mayor Fred Jung, who was ultimately the deciding vote in moving on to kind of the next phase of passing this ordinance.
So, like, while Zara and Charles voted against the ordinance, it was Dunlap, Valencia, and Jung who voted in support.
Yeah, this does seem like a bit of a recurring pattern in terms of their voting.
Definitely is.
But I think, back to the ordinance, I know that it came up a lot that this had been, like, years in the making. Like, they spoke that it, Dunlap spoke about how this had crossed, like, the desk of committees years ago.
Yeah.
This is an issue that Daily Titan has reported on in the past, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, before all of our time here, I believe. Yes. It has been reported on for quite a while.
With such a sort of, I guess, historic or momentous kind of issue, sort of recurring in City Council time and time again, it sort of seems like we're nearing the end of this saga in terms of them introducing this ordinance and then placing their final vote on it next Tuesday. Do you have any projections or sort of any intel on what the sort of business owner's response to this ordinance will be if it is passed?
I don't necessarily have intel. I think that a lot of business owners will probably be upset by this passing, especially there's just a lot of like venue owners in Fullerton. I would predict that it would pass. I think the voting will turn out the same. But, yeah, I think it'll continue to kind of be a little bit divisive, very similar to Walk on Wilshire. Even once it had passed, there was still a lot of outcry, and there's still kind of, I think, a little bit of tension around it, that people are still upset that it was turned back into a roadway.
100%.
So I think it'll be kind of one of those decisions that keeps reoccurring.
I don't think that this would be an ordinance that would come to City Council for a while, but they also discussed the need for residential like noise limitations in the meeting. It was very briefly like touched upon, but they kind of stated the need to also look at noise levels in residential areas as well as commercial ones.
Yeah, I can see that being another issue coming up.
At some a lot point. To look forward to in City Council.
Yes, it's always a good time.
Yeah,
great time to be a Daily Titan reporter.
And that's what I say.
As long as you're not working at the news desk.
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
Sometimes it's a good day to be a Daily Titan reporter.
It's a great time to be the layout editor, I can tell you that much.
Right. I have a question. Do you know when the government is going to reopen?
It will reopen when I set foot in Washington, D.C. on Wednesday. When I get off that plane.
They've been waiting on you to come with the keys to the city and unlock that.
Because I'm just, I'm going to be the great mediator. For the United States government, and
they're
it will
not
reopen.
Ready for Michelle King to intervene.
No, because like, I just have that power about me, and I really want to go to the Smithsonian Museums. And just me and being there,
you
and
that.
Then
you're so brave, you work so hard. Saying,
right? But I do have a question for you. That. Mm-hmm. With you being the Michelle King, what do you think the public's response to you being there during No King's Day is going to be?
Oh, wow, I didn't even consider that. Oh my gosh, yeah, I'm well, big protest against me, like...
Right.
How will you respond? Scary. The people are going
to
be expecting
I'm going to bring the government back, so they have to...
But aren't they protesting the government?
Right, well, but the sensitive nature of people's full names in certain individuals.
Right. I think they'll be happy to have the government as a facility that pays people and runs our country back.
Yeah.
Who knows about the administration? They'll be pleased with what I can do to bring the government back to a functioning state.
The people are looking forward to meeting Michelle King.
They are.
I can't wait to see it.
Well, I'm one of them.
They are, well.
Well, then, I think we better let you get out of here and go pack up so you can meet
those
people soon.
Yeah, I'm going to start packing my bags.
Wow. Come back soon, though.
I will.
All right, then. All right. We'll see you soon.
Bye.
Bye. All right, then. We're going to venture on into the world of theater, and we're going to talk about a recent production that CSUF Devise Theater has been putting on. And guess who we have here to talk about it with us?
Who do we have here to talk about this?
None other than the lifestyle editor, Raniel Santos, who also went and watched the play from what I know.
This is crazy. How was the play, in your opinion?
Yes, please tell us.
I've seen it twice now. I went to the run-through, when it was like the dress rehearsal, and then I saw it an opening night. I loved it both times. It was incredible. So the play is like, it's based on this expedition that was led by John Wesley Powell in the late 1860s that went through the Colorado River. The expedition was led by 10 men, but... None of the actors are cis men, which I think is really cool, because it kind of delves into masculinity and what that looks like from like a different perspective, and like they fall into it so seamlessly that you didn't even realize that they're not cis men, like they're. They just feel like the characters that they are.
Yeah. How did the sort of perspective of the actors and actresses sort of inform the performances as those, like, cis men?
I think this was something that the director and the actors touched on, is that they did a lot of research, but there wasn't a lot for some of them to go off of, because there's not a lot of records on the people that weren't, like, the leaders. Like, there's a lot in Powell, so lead actor Kaylee Nash, So late actor Kaylee Nash was able to draw on a lot of the research into her performance, but because there's not a lot of information available on the rest of the members, they just kind of got to make the characters their own, and they got to have their own interpretations of what these men were like. So they got to be like, and because it's like 1860s, they got to be like, you know, dirty and grimy and nasty. Now. Which I think was like, I bet it was really freeing for them.
Yeah. On that note, I know that in the article you talk about speaking with the director about kind of how she approached this and like was very particular in decisions of casting. Do you want to talk a little bit about your conversations with the director?
Yeah, the director, I got to speak to the director, Angela Vega. And we had a really, really, really good conversation about how the play is all really, she took away from that it's really about how we tell stories, because there's not a lot of information out there about this expedition. So they got to like, both the script writer, Jacqueline Backhouse, and Angela got to repackage and reinvent the story of this expedition in their own way from a kind of feminist lens.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about sort of the theater setup, because I'm familiar with Angela Vega's work doing Theater in the Round, and this is at the Hallberg, which is another round theater as well. So how did the sort of perspective of a 360-degree view sort of affect the way the actors performed? Like, what was the perspective like being in the room?
Well, I thought it was really interesting, because I, while I was doing the run-through, because the seats were nearly empty, I got to move around a bit and see, like, the different perspectives of the different actors. Like, sometimes they weren't facing me, sometimes they were, but no matter which way you were facing, you could kind of tell what their expressions were, like, how they were feeling, how they were acting, just purely based on their physical performance, because it is very heavily a Devise Theater production, because it's part of the Devise Theater program, and so it feels like they took full advantage of that. Like, all the characters were very physical, kind of, like, moving around, there's a lot of action, a lot of, like... a lot of like the stereotypical manly things that you do, like you bump, like chest bumping and like pounding on your chest, and there's a lot of a lot of physical humor, a lot of play on that.
Yeah, and I know that you said that you went to go see this play twice. So kind of how was the energy different in from both times that you went to go watch it, like different from the first time and the second time, and then when you were watching it like with an audience, like what did you feel like the energy in the audience was?
Yeah, honestly, the biggest difference was the fact that the audience was there. Like, I think the run through went so well, and then like the opening night, it was the way they played it. That was nearly identical. The only difference is that there was a packed theater, and you could tell like what the audience gravitated towards the most, like what the funniest joke, what they thought the funniest jokes were, and a lot of it had to do with the crude humor that was sprinkled throughout the play.
Yeah.
That again deals with how like masculinity is perceived. So that was like really interesting, because like I know that there were parts where I laughed a lot during the run through, and like the production crew was like got the production crew, and sometimes they differed, sometimes they were the same from what the audience thought was funny.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask a little bit about the set design. Obviously, like kind of going back to the theater and the round sort of thing. With so much space to sort of utilize, and also like such a large ensemble on stage with like a minimum of what, 10 people on stage at a time essentially, how did they use the space? Because I saw the photos you took and it looked very dynamic with the way they used sort of drapes to mimic waterfalls and things like that. So being in the theater, what was the set design like, and what was sort of your experience talking to the person that did the scene design?
Yeah, I talked to Max Stewart, who was the show's scenic designer, and they talked a lot about how because this is like a device theater production, and there's like minimal, I don't want to say minimal, but like it was kind of a simpler setup, with like just the mountains and the boats and the water, and very few props other than like a couple of like barrels and like a shotgun or whatever, because they said that what they wanted to do was like, let the actors be able to really explore and like have a lot of freedom to roam around the space.
Okay, one final question for you. If you had to venture into the Grand Canyon, what are three things that you would bring with you?
Ooh, that's interesting. I've been to the Grand Canyon once before, but I didn't bring anything. I think if I went again, I'd bring a professional camera so I could take photos, because I feel like the photos that I got there were not great. Second, I think I'd bring my mom, because I remember she had an amazing time taking photos there, and she loves taking photos.
That's a fire answer.
To the point where it's annoying.
That's good.
That is the answer.
Right.
Yeah. Third thing. Do I want to cop out and say my dad?
Well, like for consistency's sake, you might have to.
You might just have to.
I'll bring my dad.
Okay, bet. Yeah. Well, I think in a very Now You See Me fashion, I think it's time to disappear for a little bit. Damn. I think it's time to. And then.
Okay.
Okay, yeah. Then, so we'll see you soon.
Thank you for your wise words.
Right, thank you, Raniel.
Hey Titans, this is Sergio Gonzalez, the digital managing editor of The Daily Titan. Stay connected and follow us at The Daily Titan on social media. Be sure to pick up a paper on campus in the Orange newsstands. If you want more stories, check us out online. We're holding our semesterly Daily Titan Fest this Thursday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Come by the Humanities Co-op to check out our booth and our amazing sponsors. See you there.
Up next, we have an opinion written by Litzy Aguilar and Jada Jackson about gun control, specifically how, since schools are the most affected by mass shootings, students are central in raising awareness on public policy and advocating for changes in gun control.
Yeah, I think this article really illustrated a lot of points about how students can sort of aid in the battle for gun control reform.
Yeah.
And different ways that gun violence and mass shootings have affected students, especially at this age. And I think that they do a really good job centering sort of the more college voice, talking about like the different ways college campuses have looked to sort of fight back against poor gun control.
Yeah.
And things like that. And like they highlight different things like Students Demand Action and other advocacy groups and sort of methods that students have used to sort of cement real change in politics when it comes to gun control.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the overall topic of this is just really important because of how prevalent mass gun violence has become, especially in connection to education and learning.
One of the interviews in the article with a professor from Cal State Fullerton, a political science professor, Rob Robinson, reflected on kind of the nuances with gun violence on college campuses in specific, and how certain factors such as suicidal ideation or just like mental health issues in general can kind of like prompt that gun violence. And I thought that was like a really interesting take on it, and it also further like it prompts the gun violence, and then also it just like kind of increases like fear and anxiety on campuses, which I think can also be said about just like campuses in general, like definitely, college and beyond.
Definitely, it's like guns themselves are sort of this final solution to a lot of problems people feel like they have. So sort of limiting their access to guns or changing the way gun control is handled sort of causes people to look for other more tangible and more permanent solutions rather than these sort of more violent, shorthanded ones that come as a cause of gun violence.
Yeah, and I think what the article talks about is how that change specifically, like advocating for that change, should come from people who are affected by it. And like when speaking about mass shootings in general, again, it's like crucial to have those student perspectives and conversations about gun legislation and definitely gun control.
And this has sort of been a conversation that's occurred at Cal State Fullerton for a little bit now, especially in terms of having students that were affected by this kind of violence speak. A couple years ago, David Hogg, who was a survivor of the shooting in Parkland in 2018, spoke at Beyond the Conversation for Social Justice Week. And he also kind of reflected on his experience with mass shootings and gun violence on a campus and how that sort of shaped his perspective to want to do more in terms of the reform. And hearing him speak on the more underlying or potentially missed details that are factors in gun violence on campuses was really enlightening, because it also opened up a new level of conversation surrounding gun control on campuses.
Yeah, and then I think this article also does a good job of talking about how this is like a bipartisan issue and how change should come like regardless of where you stand on that political spectrum. There also is another interview from the president of the College Republicans on campus talking about how it's just like important to have those conversations on campuses in general. And I think Andres Burias spoke about, the president of College Republicans, spoke about how the First Amendment and like just allowing free speech on campuses is an important part to like allow for debate.
Yeah, and I think this sort of the sort of conversation that gets opened up about gun control and gun violence on campuses is sort of tied into this sort of ongoing conversation about the First Amendment and the sort of crackdown upon it, because the ability to speak through the First Amendment allows students to have these more open dialogues about various issues and like mass violence and gun control on campuses.
Yeah. And I think, like I said before, that also kind of just speaks, like, towards the importance of, like, exercising that First Amendment right, and, like, students need to engage in advocacy for, like, issues that are affecting campuses and, like, very clearly, it like, causing tangible concerns and, like, shifts in, like, overall sentiment and, like, safety or anxiety on the other side of the spectrum, like, on campuses.
Definitely. And I think over time there's definitely been more sort of progress made in the field of gun control and in the field of preventing these sort of violent attacks on students, but there's definitely still more work to be done with different events occurring like here and there and every day. But the students using their voices to sort of speak against these things and sort of speak to making a push for progress is definitely like a cause that every student should be behind.
Yeah, I think on a final note, one of the important points that was like expressed in this article was how sometimes political efficacy, or like people's sentiments on political efficacy, are, especially like the younger generation, kind of aren't as strong, because as like people who are younger, we don't really see like representation for our age demographic in legislative bodies. So that kind of just makes people, especially like college students, feel like their voices aren't really counting for anything. But I think this article like does a good job of speaking about how those sentiments kind of aren't accurate to like the political landscape as it is, and it's like important to still engage and like make your voice heard, because because you aren't, like, your demographic isn't, like, reflected in Congress or, like, in the Senate or,
because
like,
if they won't do it for you, you sort of have to do it for yourself.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's just, yeah, just, like, express the importance of sharing your perspectives, because there isn't anybody who's, like, making these legislations that has that perspective.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, we're going to jump on into sports and serve up some volleyball content with our sports correspondent and digital managing editor, Sergio Gonzalez.
What? No way.
Yup, I'm back.
Wow, that's crazy.
I know. Feels like I was just here.
It's almost like you were.
I think I might have been.
No
way. Dude, no way, actually.
So what's up with volleyball, though?
They had a couple of games this past week, and they finally returned home.
How'd they go at home?
Okay, so a little bit of background. They played their first 16 games of the season on the road.
That's actually kind of diabolical. That's crazy.
Yes. Yeah. Like, literally.
So, in their 16 games on the road, how did they do?
They did okay. They had a total record of 6-10. Because of the renovations, they had to start their first four conference games on the road. They won their first one. They swept UCSD 3-0, and they played in like a loud gym. I was there. It was pretty cool. And then after that, they got swept themselves in the following three, and I was just like...
Well, you know, what goes around comes around. But then they came back around to Fullerton.
Well, they did come back around at Fullerton, and they got swept in their home opener. So that made four straight games in which they got swept after sweeping their first one.
But what goes around comes around, so maybe they'll be better in the future.
Yes, actually, because on Saturday, they swept Cal State Bakersfield.
Right.
So there you go.
And it is written.
Right, and how big was that sweep? Because in the article, it talks about just, like, they were kind of dominating.
Exactly. No, it was pretty huge because, like, it was something that they needed. They actually packed out the gym a decent bit in their home opener, which is good because it doesn't happen often for volleyball. And there was a lot of energy in there. Like, I feel like it was good. It's not something that I've seen before for volleyball. Maybe a little bit for men's basketball, but not too frequently. But I talked to Coach Cannon after the game, Nikki Cannon, and she said that the energy just felt good. And, like, going forward, it was something they wanted to use as a momentum. And they sure did on Saturday when they beat Cal State Bakersfield.
Definitely. And with the sort of off-court adversity they're facing with the renovations in Titan Gym, did the change in location of their game at home sort of have any effect on the team or on the way they played at all?
I almost don't think so. I think it's something new for them in a good way, because when I went to the UCSD game, our buddy and assistant sports editor, Justin Rosette,
I love that guy.
I know. He had talked to Coach Cannon, and Cannon said that it was more so fuel, and it was something they were taking pride in, and that was their mentality with it, obviously because they didn't have many home games or any. So now I think it's just a bit of a, like, okay, let's get comfortable here. They had the energy that first game, and obviously didn't reflect in the box score, but it did on Saturday, and obviously that's good going forward.
Absolutely. So what do you project next for them with their games coming up? Who's their next opponent?
It's going to be a little bit tricky. They've struggled a bit in conference. Now they are 2-4. But this weekend they play two games on the road. They go to UC Santa Barbara on Friday, and then they go to Cal Poly on Saturday. So two tough teams. We'll see how they do.
Definitely. Definitely. Mm-hmm. If you were on a volleyball team, what position would you want to play?
Ooh, they call it an outside hitter. Mm-hmm. You're kind of like up front, and like you got to block, you got to spike the ball. I feel like I have a little bit of height. I could be good at that. I also like to serve, but like...
What's your vertical? You serve every day, but my vertical is like okay. Yeah?
Yeah. I serve every day.
Every day.
Wow, thank you so much.
Someone would say. Actually, yeah. Everyone would say.
What position would you want to play on the volleyball court?
I don't think you should ask me this question.
Okay.
Okay.
For sure.
Wow. I guess we'll never know.
We'll never know.
Yeah, how about you?
I'm so libero down, bro.
You're libero?
I'm libero, for sure.
Are you rocking the opposing jersey? Because they do that, liberos.
Like, that actually is true.
On some taunting mechanics, I might. On some real taunting mechanics, I might.
I've always thought that's pretty cool that they do that, but...
If you could wear one opposing team's jersey as libero, what team would you wear? Ooh.
Are we talking, like, Big West teams?
Ooh. Whatever you want.
If it helps to defeat our rivals, like, unfortunately...
You're throwing on the LB?
I'll throw on the LB if no one sees me in the LB.
Mm-hmm. But if you're on the court in the LB, aren't all the fans going to see you in the LB?
I wouldn't be on the court. But
so how is this?
So you would just support the LB,
right? You're just up until the game.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
So it's like, yeah, they don't know.
Oh, okay. up until the game, and that's like bad luck.
No, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. For
right.
Sure.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
I think that about wraps it up on our end. I think we'll be seeing you soon.
I hope so. It was fun.
We'll be looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
My people will call your people.
Oh.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay then.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
I guess. Bye.
Yeah. Bye. And that's it for this week's episode of DT Pod. Be sure to pick up a copy of the Daily Titan on campus or check us out at dailytitan.com to read the articles mentioned in today's episode. Thank you all for listening, and as always, if you like us, we love you.
Whoa now, Titans! Let's not go anywhere, because you know we gotta give a couple of thank yous to our amazing staff that help us produce the Daily Titan podcast. So in the words of Mac DeMarco, we're gonna be giving out a couple of thank yous right now. We're going to start that off with a thank you to our executive producers, Sergio Gonzalez and Jaden Lovelady. We're then going to transition that into another thank you for our producer, Michelle King. We also got to give a big old thank you to our assistant producers, Giselle Medina and Raniel Santos. And on top of that, we're also going to give a big old thank you to Bijan Schuster-Risaday for providing the music in today's episode. But beyond everything and above all, we got to give the biggest thank you to everyone that tuned into this week's episode and stayed in touch with the Daily Titan. Make sure you pick up a copy of the broadsheet on campus and check us out online. We'll see you soon, Titans. Thank you!